Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. So today I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things that have come in as questions lately. I'm going to do this in two segments. The first is all about milestones. I get a lot of questions about, you know, is there a timeline that I can follow? What to do when my kid or my child is 10? Is it time for XYZ? When should I start this? When should I do that? When should I have my special needs trust? When should I be thinking about guardianship? All kinds of questions about certain ages and stages. So I thought I would do a little run through just some suggestions about milestones and markers of when you can start thinking about certain things. So I thought this might help. Okay. So planning for a disabled child is challenging because there's no one path to follow. I think if you've been listening to this podcast at all, you probably get that. We talk about that a lot. If this is your first time here, welcome, welcome. I'm going to say that again. Your path is your own path. Your family's path is your own path. There is no prescription. There is no recipe. So take all of this as some helpful suggestions and tips. There is no one path to follow. These are just some things to think about. When I sit down to advise parents who have a child with any kind of a diagnosis, or even not a diagnosis, but some things that are going on, then, you know, there are certain milestones for sure that we want to pay attention to. This is true when formulating an estate plan, or when we're looking at, more importantly, a life plan for that child and for the whole family, really, because the child is one person in the family. And I know that that child is often what drives a family in to see me, parents in to see me, but often we end up talking about the entire family. So first, we're going to talk about the disability. What type of disability is it? But as we all know, naming a disability is not a predictor. You can't say my child has autism type whatever and know what that means for that child. You can't say my child has an intellectual disability. My child has an IQ of 55 or 70 and know what that looks like. That is going to be different for every person. My daughter Elizabeth, as many of you probably know now, had mitochondrial disease. I have met many people with mitochondrial disease. First of all, there are many different types of mitochondrial disease. But even people who had the same type of mitochondrial disease as Elizabeth, they looked, many of them, very different than she did. It is not a predictor. So labeling the disability, it's an important starting point, but it does not end there. So start with that. Proper planning will differ depending on whether a child has autism or an intellectual disability, a physical disability, certainly, you know, blind, deaf, or hard of hearing, or another disability. But again, it's not going to end there. But as the child ages, you're going to be looking at things like legal capacity. You're going to be looking at what supports are available and needed and so much more. Community and what's available in your community is going to be so different than what might be available in my community, and so on and so on. So many factors to take into account. And remembering that just because these factors are available doesn't mean that you and your family would want to take advantage or to use those supports available to you. I have counseled so many families in my time, and every family is different, and no judgment. I have many families who want every resource available, and I have many families who have said, no, thank you, no government, no services. That's not how our family is going to roll. We have great supports in a different direction. And that is the planning that they put in place for their family. And that's what works for them. Lots of choices, lots of options. Aren't we lucky? Aren't we blessed in our society that those options are available to us? So we have to take all of those things into consideration as we're formulating a life plan. Okay, so now let's talk about those milestones. So birth to three, if you know at that time that there is something going on, if you have a diagnosis or don't, but you have some issues, then at this stage, early intervention is going to be key. Fortunately, we know so much more, and early intervention is fairly commonplace now, and it's a primary source of supports for families and children. And this intervention is fairly comprehensive and global and should address the whole child. Here in Massachusetts, it's managed by the Department of Public Health. In your state, it may be under a different government resource. And after the appropriate evaluations, a plan will be developed and address all the child's needs. Depending on your state, Medicaid may be available for infants and toddlers with special healthcare needs. So that would be something to look into as well. After age three, you can move into, if your child needs further resources, an evaluation will be done, and it will be decided after that evaluation whether they need further services in the school system, and thus starts the IEP process. So many of you will have been in the thick of this for the longest time. At this stage, there are limited children's services available from different state agencies outside of school. So I'm not talking about school services just yet, but state agencies like such as in Massachusetts, the Department of Developmental Services would have very, very limited services for children with an intellectual disability or autism. So depending on what you would qualify for, you may have some limited supports available to you. In Massachusetts, we have a children's autism waiver. Some states have different programs available depending on your disability, depending on the funding, et cetera. So you want to look at that. Those are state agencies. And again, those are programs outside of the Department of Education in your state. Okay. Again, those might be available through Medicaid in your state. Primary source of services at this stage and age, between the age of three to age either 19, 20, 21, or 22, depending on your state, but for most states, it's going to be up to age 21 or 22, it's going to be your child's school district. And those services must be educationally related and necessary to achieve a free and appropriate public education called FAPE, F-A-P-E. And advocacy may be necessary at this stage to ensure that adequate services are being provided. So that it would be another long, long podcast. I'm not going to get into FAPE and IEPs and all of that. And we've had lots of podcasts about that. And I have another couple of podcasts coming up about advocacy, et cetera. We'll always continue to do podcasts about schools and IEPs and advocacy and transitions and things like that. But the next milestone I really want to talk to you about is age 14 to 16, which is transition age from school services. And depending on your state, transition services start between age 14 to 16. And federally, the age is 16. In Massachusetts, it's 14. And depending on your state, you will have anywhere from age 14 to 16. So consider whether your child needs a transition plan in their IEP to transition to adulthood as part of their educational plan. And that means, do they need services to continue into adulthood after they leave school? That's the question. If you feel that they are going to need to continue to receive services as an adult, once they leave their school program, they need a transition plan. So the team, your school team, if appropriate, should have a referral to the appropriate adult service agency in your state that would be identified and would carry on a service plan. And that's the whole transition planning process that needs to take place, starting at the very latest under federal law at age 16. So this referral usually gets submitted by the school, but it can be submitted by anybody, by a family member, by the student themselves, by an outside agency. Generally speaking, the school usually submits it. And this transition planning form is attached to the IEP. And it should list evaluations that are necessary and any action steps required to achieve the transition goals that are stated in the plan. And the transition goals should not just be plucked from the IEP goals. They should be new and specifically related to transitioning to adulthood. Then the next milestone is going to be age 17, and you're going to talk about whether the child is likely to receive a diploma or a certificate and what the next steps are going to be for the child. And the other thing is what legal authority the parents or other caregivers might need in order to continue supporting the child after the child turns 18. And when I say supporting the child, I mean supporting legal decision-making. So that means it's time to start evaluating and considering guardianship, or in your state, it might be called conservatorship. So what you need to start thinking about is, does my child need help making decisions? And what does that help look like? Can they be supported without a legal enforcement, a legal piece of paper? And we've done, you know, lots of shows here about guardianships and conservatorships and what that looks like. And, you know, and we'll continue to talk about this and person-centered planning and you know, how to support with the least intervention possible. Guardianship is necessary some of the time. In fact, you know, a lot of the time, and only you and your family know what's necessary. Sometimes we need to do guardianship, conservatorship in the beginning, and over time, our children grow in their decision-making capacity. Because they're not ready at 18 doesn't mean they won't be ready at 25 or 30. As we put the team in place that helps support them. They don't always get this support in the school system, and it takes our kids longer to mature and to be on their path to adulthood. So as you're thinking about their ability to do adulting and independent living and make healthcare decisions and advocacy decisions and self-determination, you know, just think about how can I support this child and what are the options available to them? Will a healthcare proxy and a durable power of attorney and a HIPAA authorization do that? Those are decision sharing and supporting documents. They are not, you know, I'm not stepping in for my child. I'm supporting with my child. I'm, you know, helping make decisions. I'm not making decisions instead of and for them. So in some ways you step into their shoes, you know, as a guardian, or do you want to stand beside them and sometimes behind them? So you need to think about what is the right way to support. So first of all, do they need the support? Second of all, in what way can I support? And then, you know, who do they choose? Who would they choose to support them in this endeavor? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered. And then if I do need a guardianship, you know, can I limit it only to those decisions that are absolutely necessary that I step into? And that will give you an opportunity to provide a guardianship only in those areas needed. And, you know, it doesn't need to be overly broad. You don't need to take over everything. Absolutely, we want our children to grow and learn to be the full adults that they were meant to be. At this time, too, at age 17, we want to start looking, if we haven't already done so, at any special needs estate planning that either we've put in place already, or that if we haven't done anything, you know, this is the time. Because as we go forward to look at public benefits, which I'm going to talk to you about in just a sec, we want to make sure that we don't undermine any public benefits programs that we apply for and put in place. So this is the time that we look at our trusts, that we make sure that we have all the people in place that are going to support our adult child, whether it's trustees, trust protectors, other people to step in as power of attorney, healthcare agents, et cetera. We want that whole network in place, and we want all of our financial decision-making supported. We want to make sure that any life insurance, any other financial vehicles, everything is tidied up at this point in time. If there are concerns, want to map a plan prior to age 18 to either modify or abandon any trusts and draft a new plan that will comply. Even empty trusts might need to be reported to public benefits agencies, depending on the asset eligibility rules. So it's important at this time to sit down with your professionals and start going over what you have and going over the goals that you have and the plan that you want to put in place. At age 18 now, hopefully, you know, your guardianship or your legal authority decision-making is put in place. It's time to start considering submitting applications for Social Security benefits and Medicaid benefits, if you haven't already done so, or they're going to shift into adult benefits, because even if you've had children's benefits, they are going to change at this time. And it's also time to put in housing applications. Almost everywhere around the country, housing applications are on a very long wait list. Here in the Northeast, they can be 8 to 10 years for a housing voucher. You want to have that application in so that when you are finally ready for some, you know, kind of housing, it's available to you. You want to take a look again at your adult service referral, because you've got only a few years to move into the next step with your adult supports. And, you know, your adult child at this time, you know, is kind of who they're going to be. And you're getting a very good picture of the kind of supports they're going to need. Is a day program going to be appropriate? Are they going to work? Are they going to be able to live on their own with supports? Are they going to need more of a full residential program? This is the time now to start talking to those agencies that have been referred to you and to start making a plan, because it takes a long time to budget in your state for your child. You want them to be aware of what your goals are, what your child's goals are, and what kind of money they're going to need to get in their budget. Okay, age 21 is coming up, and then you need to take one final look at that transition plan, if you do have one, at the funding sources provided by the referral agency, the programs that are available. It's time to start going out and looking at those programs. Now, if you're lucky, you'll get referred to two or three. At this time, we haven't been seeing a lot of that, but hopefully that will happen for you. And make sure that your child will meet the asset and income requirements for any waiver programs that they might be getting referred to. Those are Medicaid waiver programs. So make sure that you have addressed all of those assets, all of those income streams, all of those bank accounts that they have that might have more than $2,000 in them. Work with your financial advisors, your estate planning attorneys, your consultants like me, and make sure that you've tidied everything up before they move into these adult service programs. And make sure that you've got your goals, your vision board, you know, your transition plan all in place, and you've hit your checklist and everything is where it needs to be. Okay, those are the milestones. And I'm really excited that I've been able to talk to you about this today. I know, again, that these are just suggestions and everybody's time frame milestones are going to look a little bit different. I hope that this has been really helpful for you. Another question that I often get is, how do I get ready for summer program? And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what it's been like for me getting ready for a summer program. It is the beginning of June. So this is usually when we would be doing it. Summer program would often start like sort of mid-June for us, mid to late June. And we would be, you know, a family with a kid with a lot of medical issues. So some of our stuff would be sort of around medical issues, but there's a lot here that would be, you know, really applicable to a lot of families. So I'm going to run through my little checklist for you about, you know, how to get ready for summer program and make that shift. And, you know me, I've got a checklist. I've never met a checklist I haven't loved. So let me run through for you all of my checklist for getting ready for summer program. Okay. So first and foremost, do you have an individualized healthcare plan? If your child is not medically fragile, just take another look at your IEP and your IEP goals, because there should be some goals on there that apply to your summer program as well. All right. Sometimes your summer program, you're looking at it and it's just for fun, and you're not necessarily thinking that you're going to be doing a lot of education and learning. But many of us have our kids going to summer program so that they won't regress over the summer. And that is really important. So you want to make sure that you just take a look at your IEP and that there is some proposal for them to be working on at least some of those goals over the summer. For me, I always need to look at my child's individualized healthcare plan. And if you don't have an IHP, maybe you need to work on one and prepare one for the summer program. Does it have the most up-to-date treatment information and medication list? Now's the time to update it. Make sure that the list of doctors are on there as well. And some things to consider about your summer program. What is the staffing like? Does your child need a one-to-one? Does that one-to-one need to be a medical person, like a nurse? Will it be a familiar person, or is it going to be a new person to your child? That tells you how much information are they going to need from you before the program starts. Can you participate, or have you participated in the hiring process for this person? And what medical personnel will be on site at the program? So just make sure that you're familiar with, okay, who's in the building? You know, is there a nurse in the building, or is there a nurse that covers five buildings and just like roams around, and it's going to take, you know, an hour for the nurse to get to the building? So it's a 911 call. Those are important things to know. What is the location? Is it an inside program, an outside program? Are they inside part of the time and outside part of the time? I mean, most summer programs, they like to be outside a lot. Is it a new location, or is it in the same old familiar building that your child's always in? Will you have an opportunity to tour the building or the location before your child stops, you and your child? And did you do this before the program was decided upon? Did you get to see it before the program was decided upon? So just a handy tip, sometimes you need to get a doctor's order for things like air conditioning. I know that's not necessarily true for different parts of the country, like, you know, the South, where there's air conditioning everywhere. But here in the Northeast, it's not a given that your schoolroom is going to have air conditioning in it. I know that sounds crazy, but it is true that not every single classroom has air conditioning. So, back in the day, we would have to get a doctor's note that said that our kid would need to be in a classroom that had air conditioning in it, so that they would make an accommodation for that. I know it sounds crazy. Okay, and then you have to figure out the transportation. And again, air conditioning on the transportation, believe it or not. So make sure that you understand the transportation and what that looks like, and even transportation going back and forth to different things. Okay, you want to make sure that you have a little list of how things went in the school year, and you want to share your progress notes with the summer program, as well as any difficulties that they had, whether they were behavioral, healthcare, et cetera. And did anything go really well, so that you can give them some tips about how to keep the progress going, and anything that they would be able to integrate into the summer program that would work really well in the setting that they're going to be in. Will you have an opportunity to meet with the medical personnel or the teacher, so that you can go over and discuss all of the things that I just mentioned before the program starts? Not the first day, because they're going to be crazy on the first day. That's not the time. They're not going to remember anything that you're telling them. Is there like an orientation day before the kids start? Will you have half an hour to be able to give them your notes, send everything over, have a chance to talk with them just for a few minutes? The more comfortable they are with your child's issues, the less conflict that you are likely to have throughout the program. So I know it's uncomfortable sometimes to share this level of information, but it will resolve a lot of conflict before it even starts. How accessible is the nurse and the teacher? How comfortable do they feel with any issues that your child has, whether they're behavioral issues, whether they're medical issues, et cetera. Do you have a private nurse or a private aide that need to be introduced? And do they even allow those things? Some require contracts for liability with the home healthcare provider or the private aide. So you need to make sure that this is all in order and everything's been figured out. And, you know, of course, I like to set up a notebook that goes back and forth to report any behavioral healthcare issues, but also all the wins, all of the good stuff going on. And then again, if you can tour to just look for any obstacles, me, I always looked at the physical obstacles, like, okay, are there going to be any impediments for mobility purposes, things that other people didn't see because they weren't in a wheelchair. So, you know, they wouldn't notice that little bump or that, you know, she couldn't go out this door, et cetera, et cetera. How many times did they go down to the lake to swim? How long it was going to take for her to get changed in order to make that transition to that activity? You know, if they had a 20-minute activity and it takes her 10 minutes to get changed for it, she just wasn't going to be able to enjoy it. They wouldn't build in enough time for certain things. Is there any medicine or a special food that needs to be refrigerated? And do they have a way to do that? Of course, what are the emergency procedures for your child in case of fire or other crisis or emergency? And lastly, do you need to call a team meeting in advance to discuss any of these issues in a more formal manner? Okay, those are my crazy checklist tips for your getting ready for your summer program. I hope they help. I'm sure there are a million more that you can think of. I would love for you to share them with me. So please send me all your DMs and I will add them to my checklist and get them out to everybody. I hope your kids have a great summer, have a wonderful summer program. And I'm going to send you my checklist and do a program on getting ready for coming back to school after your summer program is over. So I've got a bunch more really awesome programs coming up in the next couple of weeks. Hope you'll keep tuning in. Love to see you all. Thank you. Bye now.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.